Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 30th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. Well, the orange-headed one has now been in president for a little more than a week. He has done many amazing, hugely astounding things. They're bigly things. He signed a lot of bigly executive orders. And one of the bigly executive orders that he has signed relates to two issues that most climate hawks thought were pretty well settled, or at least headed towards being well settled. And that is the issue of the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Keystone XL Pipeline. So just to remind everybody, the Keystone XL pipeline was one of the signature environmental movements of the Obama administration. Years of fighting over this pipeline that's supposed to cross the Canadian border, come down through the United States, and end up in Louisiana, where the hated tar sands would be processed and shipped off to China. You know, helping Americans a lot. And the other project was the Dakota Access Pipeline, which is supposed to bring the output of the fracking operations in the Bakken Shale up in North Dakota, to put it in a pipeline, bring it down, and have it be processed somewhere in the middle part of the country. And, of course, through the wonders of environmental, of white privilege, this pipeline got routed right across the water supply of the Dakota, of the Standing Rock Sioux Indians. And they, of course, protested it. And come last December, not so long ago, the whole thing came to a head. And Mr. Obama rejected the pipeline, or at least put an environmental impact statement requirement on it, which was going to delay us for a couple years anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So tell me, DR, what did the great and wonderful Oz tell us this past week about the Dakota Access Pipeline?
Well, he signed two executive actions. There's some dispute as to whether or not it's actually an executive order attempting to facilitate the construction of the Dakota Access of the Keystone XL pipelines. Brad Plumer of Vox had a great piece in which he noted that the Dakota Access pipeline still has to be analyzed by the Army Corps of Engineers. And obviously, there's still going to be plenty of lawsuits involved. Trump invited TransCanada to sort of renew its application for the Keystone XL pipeline, but there's going to be plenty of lawsuits involved. I believe there was one story in which Jane Kleb of Bold, Nebraska, basically made the point that Trump will turn some of the Republicans who voted for him in Nebraska against him by trying to use eminent domain to try to seize the land to build Keystone XL. So this
just saying passing that Jane Kleb was the keynote speaker at the MCAN Toxic Action Annual Conference last year. So there you go. We got in the proximity of fame. But yeah, Jane Kleb pointed out that there are serious issues to even if Keystone XL is reignited, so to speak.
So essentially, this could be a situation where it could take several years, if ever, if these pipelines are actually built. We've mentioned before the idea that, you know, climate hawks should take a page out of climate deniers. And just as the climate deniers basically drowned Cape Wind in lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, the climate hawks should do the same with both Keystone XL and Dakota Access. And there was one story, may have been in Vox, I can't recall the specific story, may have been the New York Times, that basically made the point that, you know, because of changes in the price of oil, the Keystone XL pipeline may not make economic sense. It may not be economically justified. So it may never get built from that standpoint either. So for all this sort of chest pounding, you know, on the part of Trump, you know, with the case of Keystone XL, this thing might never get built. And with Dakota Access, it might just get drowned in lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit.
Right. I mean, the Keystone XL pipeline still has to face, I think it's a 2-year process in Nebraska. and that's the Keystone XL and the Dakota Access Pipeline, unless the administration can somehow change the environmental impact statement requirement. That's a long process. I suppose, you know, you could rubber stamp the thing, but you and I and everyone gets to participate in the environmental impact statement process, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess the other interesting, when you say lawsuit after lawsuit, I think it's true that reports say that the president has a financial interest in both of these companies, right? Mm-hmm. Trump owns stock in both Dakota Access Pipeline and Spectra Energy, TransCanada, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, is that on the face of it? I mean, is that okay? I mean, is that what's his name? TransCanada, by definition, is a foreign country.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and he getting emoluments from them, isn't that illegal?
You would think it. I'm sure that might be an issue that might result in another lawsuit that might again continue to delay this as long as possible. It seems to be more on the part of Trump, a sort of, you know, shout out to those who supported the building of the pipeline rather than some sort of real effort to actually get it built. Because Trump, for all his craziness, even he has to know that, you know, people still do have access to the courts unless he's going to somehow try to abolish the courts. He's not a king.
He never settles. He never settles. He's gonna fight and win. You know. Well, I guess the actual implications of these notes, these things that he's signing on big leather books like he's, you know, Henry VIII, it's not clear what the consequences of those are, but they can't be good, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a good thing for climate hawks to see the president taking such a high-profile thing in favor of his own companies there. But mm-hmm. we'll have to watch that. I guess the other interesting thing that's happened recently is the assault on the scientific method that is represented by the new administration's demands that the EPA and the agricultural Department of Agriculture basically shut down their outward-looking social media feeds,
mm-hmm.
right? And to the point where academic papers that are based in science have to be vetted by the political people.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the commissar on The Hunt for Red October, right? The guy who has the ultimate sway is the political one, right?
Mm-hmm. And indeed, this would be a more extreme version of some of the goings-on during the George W. Bush administration, you may recall, where Jim Hansen was basically forced to sort of pre-clear any sort of his public statements with White House public relations officials during the George W. Bush administration. Remember the censoring and the editing of scientific documents during the George W. Bush administration that was exposed by Rick Pilt. So apparently the Trump team wants to bring those bad old days back and go even further. There was a recent report about efforts by one of the Trump transition people to basically recommend a gutting of the EPA staff, a shrinking of the EPA, essentially because Congress would have to be in charge of actually phasing out the EPA, shutting down the EPA, and because that would be profoundly unpopular, it seems to be some sort of way to gut the EPA mm-hmm. from within, very similar to something to an effort that President Reagan and his equally radical EPA administrator, the late Ann Gorsuch, tried to pull in the early 80s before public backlash and resistance from Congress basically stopped her cold in her tracks. So we will see if history repeats and if this sort of effort to essentially, you know, smother the EPA is successful this time around.
Well, it's funny you should say Ann Gorsuch, because I saw in the paper, I think it was this morning or yesterday morning, that the three finalists mm-hmm. for the Supreme Court seat of the unlamented Mr. Scalia, that mm-hmm. this guy gets to appoint after having it been stolen from the previous president. Mm-hmm. One of those three guys is Ann Gorsuch's son.
Mm.
Which,
wow.
Yeah, it's like, really? Really?
Whoa. I mean, good grief. It's like a, you know, the family that slays the planet together stays together.
Well, I mean, I'm sure, I have a feeling that if Mr. Dumpster comes through actually tries to appoint one of these people, we'll have plenty to talk about next week. But, I mean, the other, speaking of gutting the EPA from the inside, there is also, I think we mentioned it in a recent show, there is something called the RAINS Act, and it's an acronym. I won't try and say what the acronym, but it's R-E-I-N-S. And it's basically a requirement that any new government regulations, and of course particularly regulation from the EPA, must be approved by Congress within 60 days of their issuance, which would basically allow, through kind of a pocket veto of not taking action, for Congress to kill all this regulation. And it's passed the House, right? And it's going to the Senate. And the Senate is controlled by Republicans. And if it gets to the White House, the guy will sign it. And it is a very bad bill. So I guess if you're looking for something to call your U.S. senator about, this is a good one. The RAINS Act, the R-E-I-N-S. You just kind of Google it. You'll get the details on it. But it is... You know, that's an excuse to call your senator and tell him or her that you don't like, you don't want them voting for that, because it's only Democratic filibustering that's going to prevent that thing from going through.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Okay, so I think we mentioned before, the people at the EPA, the people at the National Park Service have their own sort of underground Twitter feeds now. It's interesting. I looked, I think it was the Bad Hombre National Park Service Twitter feed, and it said, here's the URL for the location of a report on the impact of climate change on the cultural artifacts in the national parks. Download it now because it's going to disappear. Right? So I pulled it out. I never thought of it before, but one of the things the National Parks is doing is looking at, say, cave drawings and sort of prehistoric stuff that's in the national parks and how that stuff will be affected by the changing weather and the changing conditions of climate change. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, these people clearly think that all that stuff's going to get taken and deleted. I mean, they tried to delete the whole EPA website on climate change, right? And I think DRU are tweeting out, you can't delete, you can delete a website, but you can't delete science, right?
Exactly. It's fascinating, you know. I think we've talked before about the Russian concept of samizdat, you know, that like during the times of you know, Russian authoritarianism, you had to sort of smuggle, you had to sort of sneak, you know, dissident material underground. And now, you know, having a president installed by the Russians, we have samizdat right here in the United States. Good old USA.
Good old USA.
The Cold War really end? As one wall, you know, the Berlin Wall fell down, now the Mexican Wall seems to be coming up. It's like, what's going on here?
Oh, man. The latest news, since you mentioned the Russians, I read something that said, in Moscow, the Russian spy, or the spy guy, their security guy in Russia that was running the operation against, doing the hacking operation in the United States, got arrested for treason. And there's some suspicion, belief that he was an American plant, that he was a mole. So the U.S. had this guy in Moscow. I mean, if at all, so there's one scenario. I don't have all the facts, but it's conceivable the U.S. had this guy, knew what was going on, and maybe, you know, then you say, okay, is that why the FBI didn't want to come out with the information? Because that would reveal this guy's source. And what happened that this guy in Russia, got all of a sudden found out? Now they're going to start looking at the Trump administration. Did they turn over the spy, the mole over in Moscow? So the whole Russian thing, I mean, if you want something to worry about, that's an important one, because that is the equivalent of Watergate, right? That's just going to keep building. I can only hope.
This is like a John Le Carré novel from hell.
Yeah. I mean, it's so the couple things. Our esteemed, Bill McKibben, right? I'm trying to find the right words for Bill McKibben, right? Great guy, great, inspiring leader of the climate movement. He put up a post on on the Yale website. I'll put up a link to it, about asking whether or not the emergence of Trump is the end game for climate. I mean, are we done? It's kind of, it's not that, I mean, it's a pragmatic, realistic look at our situation, but he makes the case that climate is now no longer separable from any other issue, and that in order to prevail, we have to change the zeitgeist, right? The German word for the spirit of the times, the zeitgeist that is, we have to control that. It has to be a positive, progressive image of where we're going and how we're going to get there. And that we can't surrender to the Trumpian, you know, carnage of America and, you know, the crippled America. That kind of thinking is what the Trumpsters want. But he's saying, and his argument is that after all is said and done, climate hawks, I mean, you can imagine that if big money wanted to make money on clean energy, you know, it would all be pouring in. Right.
Yep.
But the way the chips have fallen, climate hawks are left standing with Native Americans and the people in Flint and the people, you know, the climate refugees. And that is the positive. That's the right place to be. Right. Mm-hmm. The oppressed and the people who the afflicted, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I guess it's just an interesting way to think of it is that not so much talking about climate, but it's opposing the whole Trumpian mindset about where the country's going and what the country's about that we have to fight back on. And it means supporting all of these other issues. It's no longer, everything's interlocked. We talked about intersectional justice last week, right, Tiara?
Yeah.
I mean, here we are. I mean, it's the only way forward.
Yes, and you have to believe that if all these disparate groups become unified, they can sort of resist this sort of stuff. You have to believe that it's possible. You have to believe that, you know, the people united can never be defeated. You have to believe, to quote that the great line from Maureen McGovern, that there's got to be a morning after, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah, morning after the Poseidon adventure, if you will, of Trumpism. You know, and all the high tides it's going to cause.
The Poseidon adventure of Trumpism.
I mean, things are certainly upside down, aren't they?
Oh, well, so here's I got one more thought that I've been running through my head. Things are so look to be fairly bleak, right? I think we all are called upon to take action. Some of us may be called upon to take even more risk, right? And so clearly things like direct action, which is a code word for getting arrested, is, you know, looming larger and larger. Not for everyone, right? Everyone can do something. But I mean, people, you know, serious people are asking themselves about this topic. And I just wanted to remind, to briefly say the following thing. Mahatma Gandhi, right, was sort of the first formulator of nonviolence as a political weapon, right? Mm-hmm. And he basically led the independence movement of India from England. But for him, it was not about getting arrested or walking up and having your head bashed in by some British soldier, right? Mm-hmm. His goal, he believed in one thing. Gandhi believed that the ends and the means are the same thing. So if you're working for a peaceful world, a just world, if that's your end, then your means have to be peaceful and just. Right. And that it requires, if you're talking about direct action, it requires some kind of mental, almost spiritual self-purification to make sure that you are in the right mind frame to identify the ends and the means. Mm-hmm. And he also said that nonviolence, this effort at nonviolence was never to vanquish the opponent. He was never talking about beating the British. What he wanted to do was to have the British recognize the humanity of the Indian people and the Indians to recognize the humanity of the British. And then you had a peaceful solution. I think that in the days ahead, we're going to have to think about things like this and find out what moral courage and moral stance we take as the aggressiveness of the Trump administration just keeps increasing. I mean, it's not going to get better, right? It's only going to get crazier. And what are we going to do about it? And it's a gut check time, not for everybody. I mean, if people listen to this podcast, you call your senator, legal, you're not going to get arrested. You got to do that kind of stuff. But there's we should understand where some of the vanguard, shall we say, of the movement is headed. Boy, that got deeper. That got darker than I thought it was going to be in DR.
Yeah, it's a great philosophical point. Of course, there's the argument of, you know, can you convince people of the immorality of their actions when they are amoral, when they do not recognize right from wrong? And in that case, do you then declare that you have to use any political means necessary to sort of resist that, where it involves, as you said, you know, calling people to make it clear, you know, that they don't want Pruitt as EPA head or Sessions as the Attorney General,
right.
you know, more resistance, you know, more marching, like the scientific march that's scheduled, I guess, sometime in the spring or the second People's Climate March in April, you know, marching to the ballot consistently. Any political means necessary to sort of resist an occupational force, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I have my way, DR, I hope that we can talk more about this because it's an interesting topic. Again, not for everyone, but it is part of the zeitgeist. So, yeah, we got to put it down there. Let me remind everybody, we'll put up links to some of the stuff we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. You can see the live links there to the stuff we talk about. You can find the show on the Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. Please share us and cut and paste the URL so that other people can see it. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, a whole bunch of other places. Right? Of course, you can find us on iTunes. Search for Massachusetts Climate Action. So, DR, we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
You hang in there. Everybody, hang in there. Join the resistance. Welcome to the resistance. We will prevail. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.